Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So I'm going to be digging into my coverage from Augmented World Expo 2026, and it's a really liminal, transitional, confusing period of what's happening in the XR industry right now. And so as I dig into this coverage, I'm going to be covering a number of different vectors of what I see is happening from lots of different perspectives. And I got a sense from a lot of people where right now is more difficult to predict where things are going to be within the next 2 or 3 years, let alone the next 10 years. And so it's really a transitional time where some things are ending, there's new things that are beginning. And so I had a chance to talk to a wide range of different people over the course of AWE. A lot of conversations off the record, just because there's a lot more uncertainty now than there has been and mostly any other time that I've been in the industry. And so I'm going to be digging into a number of different things that I see are at least little pockets of growth or hope or things that are happening that are interesting to cover from the Voices of VR podcast. There are a number of different hardware announcements that were there at AWE. I'm going to be starting with the Snap Spectacles, which was announced. Nothing was shown. It's going to be coming out later this year to be seen, but it was available for pre-order. There was also the X-Real Aura, which was probably the most new interesting hardware that I got to try out while I was at AWE. And then Qualcomm was making new announcements around the Snapdragon Reality Elite, a new chip that they have that's going to be featured within the context of the Aura glasses. And then there's also a Raven Resonance, which is a Linux-driven augmented reality glasses. And so there's a number of different trends that Ori Inbar had identified within his talk in terms of, like, these are places that you see some growth within the context of XR. Location-based entertainment, there's immersive video or more broadly storytelling in XR. There's also training and defense and reality capture were some of the things that he identified. So those are a number of different types of people that I'll be talking to over the course of this coverage, as well as kind of digging into some of the trends of open source interoperable standards that I think are hopeful. AI, of course, was kind of a persistent theme throughout, and I was actually on a panel discussion at the end of AWE called a Socratic Debate on the Future of Immersive Tech, including XR and AI. And so I was taking some provocative positions there in terms of making the ethical arguments against AI, in terms of that we're not really in a space yet to have all the different ethical and moral frameworks in place in terms of legal protections for surveillance capitalism, but also these kind of broader arguments around what AI is and how to start to think about it. So it's kind of an interesting conversation that I'll be digging here at the end, because I was building up to that throughout all my coverage here at AWE. So I'll be ending my coverage on that note. So again, lots of different kind of liminal transition periods. We'll be digging into the Snapchat specs here, although, you know, it's hard to really dig into something that I didn't really have much of an embodied experience with of myself. Snap had an opportunity potentially to show things. They decided not to show any new hardware. They talked about it in the theory and the abstract. And so kind of ironically, the only data that we had around the specs are the specs, the specifications of the actual hardware. And so I had a conversation with one of the product managers, Russell Patton, to kind of dig into a little bit more. You know, of all the different XR platforms that are out there, Snap is kind of a dark horse in some ways. And I was classifying what they were doing before as kind of like the DK1 of augmented reality. And now I think as they go into the hardware release, there's other things that are out there that are more comparable in terms of, we have the X-Real Aura. It's a little bit cheaper. It's on Android. And so they have this challenge of having their own closed platform with Lens Studio, but they're trying to create these different ways for you to have your own code to then kind of port into that, or take a Unity project and to port it out. A lot of their production of XR apps seems to be heavily reliant upon artificial intelligence and these AI models for you to be able to vibe code different aspects of your XR apps. So that seems to be a pretty key factor. But in terms of the overall ecosystem and where it plays, it's a bit of a wait and see to see what the hardware actually is and what it's like and what you're able to do with it that you wouldn't be able to do on these other devices that are out there. There's no tether. Everything's on the actual headset. It's a little bit heavier. And I guess the form factor and the comfort and, you know, the 4-hour battery life, it's a lot longer than that used to be in the previous iterations. And there's ways to tether it as well if you want to have a battery empowered on the fly. So you can do these different applications both inside and outside. So I've had a chance to go down to the Snap headquarters over the last couple of years, and I'm hoping to go back again and to cover the launch and to actually get some hands-on and have more of an informed opinion on what they represent. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Russell happened on Tuesday, June 16th, 2026, at Augmented World Expo in Long Beach, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hey, I'm Russell Patton. I'm a product manager on the Specs team. Work very closely with our whole cross-functional team to bring Specs to market.
Great. Maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
So I've actually been at Snap and now on the Specs team for 12 years. And so I started as a hardware engineer and then moved over to our product team. Background is in mechanical engineering.
Great. And so maybe you could just give a bit more context for what was announced today.
And so today we announced the next generation of Specs. And so our first consumer edition of Specs really focused on making computing more human and looking at how technology in glasses is able to, instead of bringing you out of the moment into a digital world, be able to bring digital experiences directly into the physical world with you, where you're already living, where you're already working, where you're already learning, where you're already connecting with others.
Great. Maybe you could just give an overview of sort of like the high level specs for what should people know around these glasses.
And so with Specs, the challenge that we took as a team was really to make a spatial computer that was both highly capable and also highly wearable. We wanted to be able to have meaningful augmented reality experiences, but in a form factor that you could realistically wear and use every day. And so with that, we put a lot of focus on pushing our optical technology forward. And so the new Specs have a 51 degree field of view. They feature improved transparency so that you can use them effectively both indoor and outside, be able to have natural eye contact and easily connect with others. They've got electrochromic dimming, and so that can gently transition the lens from clear to tinted in around 10 seconds. They've feature a dual Snapdragon processors built in, handling the computer vision, handling running the immersive experiences, then a slew of other features, 6 microphones, stereo speakers, an included charging case that can charge them 4 times on the go. And so it's really about having something that is capable as a computing platform of a whole variety of different experiences.
Is the idea that you would be tethering to your phone and get all data and maybe anything that's connecting to remotely to any cloud services via your phone, or is it able to directly connect to the internet?
So the thing with Specs actually is they're designed to be a standalone device. And so there's no tether, there's no compute puck, no battery pack required, no additional device required. And so the Specs are able to directly connect, for example, to the network right here and be able to directly use those internet-enabled experiences. And so I think sort of very important point on that, Specs are not a smartphone accessory. They are really a standalone device.
And so will they have like 4G, 5G on their own to be able to connect directly to cellular networks, or is this mostly Wi-Fi?
So the Specs have Wi-Fi built into them.
So you'd have to be near a Wi-Fi network to be able to work anything with remote, it sounds like then.
Yeah, you could use Wi-Fi. You could connect them to a cellular hotspot.
Okay. So you just like use your phone as a hotspot then. Okay. And so one thing that was really interesting was the battery life and the rechargeable case, and then also it sounded like some sort of display cable or a cable that could charge on the go, but also potentially like hook it up to your computer to live stream your display. So maybe you just elaborate a little bit more on the battery and what you were trying to target there with the 4 hours, but being able to recharge it, but also be able to potentially charge it on the fly.
Yeah. And so I think it really was about serving kind of all of those different important attributes of Specs. So one of them that is extremely important is that they're designed to be glasses that you can take with you on the go. And so that's exactly the idea of having the charging case, is they protect the glasses, also offers up to 4 charges on the go, so you can have them ready to use, fully charged whenever you'd like. And then you mentioned the cable. And so a couple of things there in the keynote, we have the charging cable where you can connect to the glasses, be able to keep them charged if you're doing something like a very long running type of experience, working, developing a lens if you're one of our developers. And then also the ability to use the USB-C streaming cable, where you could use the Specs as a virtual display, for example, a phone, a PC, a gaming console. So you could imagine having a large personal cinema that you can take with you to be able to watch video, an external monitor to be able to get work done, and really being able to take that experience of having that 51 degree, large screen, taking it anywhere on the go.
Yeah. In terms of resolution, I guess one way to talk about it is, like, if I were to connect my laptop computer to the specs, what resolution would my monitor be on the specs?
And so we're not sharing specific resolutions right now, but the specs display is designed to offer high fidelity, crisp visuals, and then across that very large field of view. And so we like to think of it as having like a 24-inch desktop display to give you an idea of what that field of view looks like, or 115-inch personal cinema if you look at something around 10 feet away.
Okay. And so obviously the spectacles have been out for a couple of years now. People have been developing stuff. I've attended a number of different hackathons. And so there's a lot of announcements around the cloud and the Superbase and being able to, let's say, have your own computer vision or AI models that are running. But I think it's fairly unique in terms of being able to have a wide variety of different AI tooling. So maybe you just give me a sense in terms of the various different AI integrations that you have for people that are either directly connecting into your own APIs to create the apps, but also it seems like it's got a wide range of different types of AI that can integrate into different applications. So just wondering if you could give a little bit of an overlay of the different types of AI integrations that people as developers might be able to start to think about what kind of things they might want to build into specific spatial applications.
Yeah, and so I think a few things there, and you hit on a couple of them and go a little more into detail, is the Superbase Snap Cloud that we shipped previously really did unlock a lot of those experiences that want to have both the component running on the glasses, powerful backend, whether that's to be able to save state, whether that's to be able to run some of the compute on there. That was a big unlocker. We talked about some of the partnerships with Gemini and OpenAI that provided APIs that developers could use to be able to integrate, whether that is multimodal capabilities into an experience, to be able to actually take advantage of the fact that AI is so powerful on specs because they can see and understand the world around them. And so be able to take that and leverage that in terms of AI. And so that's a lot of what developers did on that side. I think the other thing we're very excited about is we talked about some of the new development tools, like the closed loop agentic development, the migration agent that we're launching into a public beta that will really help developers not just integrate AI into their experiences, into their lenses, but actually be able to help them develop those experiences more effectively, being able to help them migrate projects, for example, from Unity onto specs, and just generally being able to take their workflow and make sure that they have easy integration with tools like Cursor, Claude Code, Codex that they may already be using as part of the development. And so I think with AI, it's exciting because there's two directions. One is how the experiences use it. One is how all of our developer tools use it to make developing those experiences as efficient as it can be.
Yeah, and there's also seem to be new ways of accessing the Snap Studio, of having like your own independent library that is then somehow getting compiled and interfacing. Maybe you could describe a little bit about what does that look like in terms of what is the actual compilation process of like writing some sort of like C++, and then somehow it goes to another step and then it feeds into Snap Studio. Is this like you're abstracting out the scene graphs and doing some sort of declarative language to like describe the screen, or what does that look like to actually have some sort of like interface that can be a little bit more programmatic that's feeding into Snap Studio?
Yeah, and so that may be somewhere we'll have to get a little more information to share with you on that. But in general, the idea with the native development kit is like you said, if a developer already has these existing, you know, C++ libraries that they may have built for their application running on a different platform, could have been a spatial platform, doesn't have to be a spatial platform, the NDK will allow them to easily bring those in, integrate it into their Lens project, and be able to have that ship on specs.
Yeah, and so it sounds like that, you know, you've been using the Snap Studio for a while now in terms of having the ability to basically be your own custom engine. If someone wanted to, say, do WebXR, I know that you've talked around having a browser on these devices. Is there a browser, and is there like some sort of WebXR implementation that might be available for people to have other ways that they might want to create like a WebXR implementation that could be viewable on the specs?
So there is a browser on the specs, and that obviously unlocks a lot of capability. We'll need to see if we have more to share on WebXR in exactly what's going to launch there on this generation, but our developer edition did have WebXR as a capability that was there. And like you said, that unlocked a lot of new experiences that people were really excited about building, because they could easily take an existing site and maybe you're shopping for furniture and now you can be able to see the piece of furniture there right into the room with you.
One of the things that I've noticed in terms of the larger AI industry is that there's been a lot of subsidized of you buy a plan and then you get a certain amount of compute. And then if you do token-based charging, then it actually would be potentially a lot more cost-wise. And so as I think about the future of spatial computing with AI integrations, the question comes up, well, who's paying for the compute? And if you imagine a future where the developers that are creating these would be having their own accounts, or if you imagine that each individual person would have to like hook it up to their own instance of Claude or own subscription in order to actually use it. So I'm just curious how the economics of some of that starts to work out. If you wanted to use some of these applications, who's actually paying for the AI subscriptions? Or if you also are investigating how to do more local models that wouldn't require that type of charging of a subscription fee?
So I'd say that somewhere probably to fully answer that question, I think we might need to take a follow-up and get back to you with the full details on that. But for some things like the agentic development, that offers the ability to take some of the tools like a subscription that someone may have and be able to directly connect that to a tool like Claude Code or Cursor and be able to use those. And overall, with respect to some of the software features on the platform, we'll definitely have more to share there as the year goes on.
So one of the things that the previous iteration of the spectacles was the weight. It seemed to be like very heavy around the ears. And then over long periods of time, it was not as comfortable. And so maybe you could just describe a little bit about the previous weight. And now there's two versions that you have with different IPD lengths. And so maybe just talk around the two sizes that you have and also the different weights that those two are going to be.
Yeah. So no, it's a great call out. And that was a really big focus of this consumer version of Specs. And so the developer product that launched in 2024 weighed 226 grams. And we have now reduced that by 40% down to 132 for the 47 millimeter size, 136 for the 52. And those refer to the lens widths. And so those are designed to be able to accommodate a wide range of different face shapes and sizes and be able to ensure people do get that comfortable fit.
And one of the things that using it for an extended period of time, sometimes it would start to overheat and shut down because of the thermal management. Just curious what type of lessons you learned from the previous iteration in terms of how to either manage that or disperse that heat in a way that doesn't overheat, or if you found that you've had much better thermal management on this consumer version of the specs than what you had previously in the developer kit of the spectacles.
So I guess what I'll say on that in general is I think designing for efficiency of the system is always something that is very important to us. I think that is, I don't know if I would say that was exactly a learning, because I think it's something that, the Kin team has continued to focus on quite a bit. And that's continued to be true here for Specs. It's about driving, efficiency in the optical system, efficiency in the compute, really continuing to drive that forward so that we can get that performance, but into that lighter, more wearable form factor.
I think another unique affordance of the spectacles and potentially the specs is that it's really designed also for outdoor use, where not all the XR devices work as well in outdoor conditions. And so maybe you could just talk a bit about what kind of design considerations you had to be able to make it work well outside, and what types of experiences do you expect once they are able to have these outdoor experiences?
So, I'll start with actually maybe the second part, then I'll go to the first part. I think the powerful thing about having a device that can go indoor and outside is that it just unlocks a huge range of experiences, whether that is navigation, whether that is, an experience that's letting you be active and requires, space to really be able to take full advantage of it. We had an experience in our developer spectacles where you could, for example, practice your dribbling. And that's something that definitely requires space to be active. Games that really let you move at large scale. So I think that's a lot of why we're so excited about having that as a capability, is we want this technology to be able to meet you where you are. And so it's not about you can only use it in this one context. It's we want you to be able to say, I experience my life indoor, outside, many different contexts. Specs can give me experiences that bring me value there. So I think that's why that's very exciting. To your question about what is required to make that happen, one of the biggest things is making sure that we can really drive that display performance, that display, including outdoors, including, in sunlight, is still clearly visible. And so a lot of work from the team went into being able to drive that display performance and then integrating the electrochromic dimmer So you can have this very transparent state. When you're indoors, be able to make eye contact, have a good natural experience, but then the spectacles can automatically tint when you go outside, both to make the experience good for kind of you as the customer, but then also make sure that content is very clearly visible.
Yeah, and when the spectacles first showed a couple years ago at your developer conference, they had a piece by Ez Devlin that was a connected lenses experience, a group shared experience within augmented reality. I know there have been a number of different location-based type of experiences here that are a collaborative games. And so having people have a shared AR experience together. So maybe you could just talk a bit about the connected lenses and what kind of things that that enables.
Yeah, so I think, like you said, that's something that we're super excited about for this technology, because I think it really comes down to the core of technology that is designed to make computing feel more human, that is designed to help people connect, that is designed to help people feel grounded into the same physical space. And these shared experiences are a great way to do that, whether it is playing a game, whether it's learning about something together where you can see the same object at the same time. And so that's something that's that continues to be very, very important with Specs, is being able to, you know, bring those experiences to it, being able to give those developer tools, being able to make sure that is something that people can experience together.
So when I look back and covering the XR industry for 12 years, I look to see what Meta did with not really engaging enterprise as much. And then, you know, they did eventually, but it was really, they were focusing on consumers. Magic Leap also sort of prioritized the consumer market. And then they went back and started to address the enterprise market a little bit more. You're announcing the specs here at AWE, but it also seems to be kind of cast for a general consumer market. So I'm just curious to hear like how you're either targeting the enterprise market and or consumer market, trying to do both or one or the other. I'm just trying to get a sense of if this is a device that you expect to see general consumers getting, or if you really see like the uptake to be first and foremost for folks here in the enterprise space, like at AWE, location-based entertainment. So yeah, just trying to get a sense of like, who is the specs for?
So I think like we said, you know, in the keynote, we really are focused on this is a consumer version of specs. And so that is the focus. That is where we're focused with the rollout. I think that said, and I don't have, you know, more to share on it now, it's something where we expect we'll see quite a bit of interest from people, you know, working on lots of different kinds of problems just because of everything that specs are capable of.
Are you getting a lot of interest from enterprises?
I don't have more to say on that specifically.
Okay. And yeah, I guess maybe just go over the price and when people can expect it. The pre-orders opened up today, but shipping sometime in the fall, but maybe just give a little bit more details and logistics. And it sounds like the developer conference that you normally have in the fall and is likely going to have more information or more launches, kind of more of an official release, but maybe just give a bit more details of the price and what we can expect next.
Yeah. And so specs are now available for pre-order on specs.com. That's with a $200 refundable deposit. And we've opened up those pre-orders in the US, the UK, and France, and they are expected to ship this fall.
And I know previously with the spectacles, there was a little more of a ongoing monthly fee that people are paying. It sounds like that you're having a flat price, but if people wanted to have a payment plan over time, is that also an option to make it more accessible for people who may not be able to pay the full price outright?
It is. And so in the US, we actually are launching here with installment payments available through Klarna. And so that's something that people will be able to see when they go onto the site, get an idea of what that could look like if they decide to go for that monthly option.
You know, you had some developers come check it out and potentially start to develop some experiences. Can you talk about what kind of things you've seen so far? I mean, we saw a lot of demos that were shown during the keynote. Was there anything new experiences that were shown that weren't possible before with what you can do with the new specs?
So I unfortunately can't share too much on new experiences here. What I can say, because I do want to say something, is I think there's a combination of both experiences that are enabled by the fact that this is wider field of view. It's a 30% larger display than the developer version, that it is 40% lighter weight, like we said. I think there are some that are enabled. I think there are many that are just made significantly better. And so the same experience, maybe what it needed was a slightly larger display. Maybe what it needed is a little more, you know, lightweight for the device. And so I think that's what we'll see, is some of both.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered yet that you want to give a shout out for, either the development community or any other things to get more involved?
So I think for anyone who is interested in developing for Specs, we definitely encourage them to check out developers.specs.com, where they can learn more about that. And then for consumers who are interested in Specs, specs.com, you can do the virtual try on there, sizing, see how those look on your face, and then pre-order if you're interested.
One follow-up on the closed-loop agent. We didn't really talk too much about it, but just give me a sense of what's the closed-loop nature of that, and is it that there's a little bit of like an empirical feedback loop, or there's some benchmarks that you showed? I'm just trying to get a sense of what is this closed-loop agent? What's that mean, and what does that enable you to do?
And so, and we'll actually have more to share at one of our sessions today here at AWE at 1 p.m. I encourage you to check it out, and I encourage anyone to be able to see that recording of that session to learn more about it. But it's really looking at the development flow is really about not one step. It's not just building something. It's also testing it. It's also refining it. And this is sort of an entire iterative loop. And so when we say closed loop, it's not just kind of doing one step and then kind of leaving that as where your off ramp is. It's really about taking that whole process that it takes to get something from idea through to publishing it and making that into an integrated flow.
And just a follow on, just in terms of AI and hallucinations, it sounds like that there's at least some like feedback loop or empirical check and balance or test or ways that it makes sure it doesn't go off the rails. Is that kind of part of that closed loop nature, is that there's a way that it has more of a bounding in terms of what it can and cannot do, and that there's a way to test it before you push it out?
So I guess part of the closed loop is testing the experience. And so making sure that it's not just developing it, but it is testing it and making sure that that experience is working well and working performantly.
Nice. And finally, what do you see as the ultimate potential of spatial computing and what it might be able to enable?
I mean, I think the potential is really about unlocking the ability for us to be able to engage with technology, to be able to bring those experiences, you know, with us, but and really meet us where we are. I think to me, that's the potential of AR, is its experiences that are meeting you in the moment, visually, spatially integrated into the world. And really just, that's a new way of experiencing computing. And that's what we're really, really excited about. And it will make computing much more human.
Anything else left unsaid you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
I think we really appreciate everyone who's been on this journey with us, and we're really excited to be able to share this next step in the journey with all of you.
Awesome. Well, Russell, thanks so much for joining me to give a bit more context about the specs that just were announced today. Available for pre-order now, and they are releasing sometime in the fall. So yeah, very much looking forward to see where this takes the future of spatial computing. So thanks so much for joining me here today on the podcast.
Thank you. Great talking with you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast and for keeping the faith for where this industry is going here in the future. I feel like this is a kind of weird time for everybody in the industry. And if you believe in where this technology may go and that it may be able to bring about positive social change and transformation in the world, then please do consider supporting me here at the Voices of VR podcast, trying to navigate these dimensions of transformation and positive change for where all this might be going. So if you enjoy the coverage that I'm doing here, then please do consider becoming a member at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.